From KUOW, 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. Hallucinations can be frightening or enlightening. They can be meaningless or they can tap into deep personal memories. Every culture has sought out hallucinogenic drugs, often for sacramental purposes. New advances in brain science have allowed us to learn much more about what's going on in the noggin when hallucinations take place. Dr. Oliver Sacks explores hallucinations in his book by the same name. Dr. Sacks is the noted British American professor of neurology at the NYU School of Medicine. He's written a string of popular books, including Musicophilia, The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat, and Awakenings. Awakenings was later dramatized into a popular movie. Robin Williams played the role of Oliver Sacks. The real Oliver Sacks joins us today from New York City. Oliver Sacks, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Your book breaks down the different causes of hallucinations, the different types of hallucinations, but are all hallucinations alike in some basic way?
They're all perceptions, apparent perceptions of something which is not there, whether they're visual or auditory or olfactory. They are often very startling. They are quite unlike dreams because one is fully awake, and they're unlike imagination because one does not voluntarily produce these. They appear to one, and you suddenly think, who ordered that? What's that? What's going on?
Do hallucinations happen solely in the mind, or is something happening to our eyes when we're seeing things that are not there, or in our ears when we're hearing things that are not there?
Something is happening in the visual parts of the brain or the hearing parts of the brain. I don't think anything happens in the mind without something going on in the brain.
How about the eyes? How about the ears? Is anything going on there when we experience hallucinations that are visual or auditory?
No, not really. It's the brain is producing them.
You call hallucinations a positive phenomenon as opposed to a negative symptom. What does that mean?
A positive phenomenon is something which comes to you, is imposed on you, as opposed to being unable to see or understand something. There's something called amusia, when you can't hear the melody in music and you can't hear the tone or pitch, but they're musical hallucinations, and they are positive, often very positive.
We've heard of visual hallucinations and audio hallucinations, but some people have tactile hallucinations also. What are they?
You feel there's someone is touching you, or there's an odd feeling in your skin. And you could also have olfactory hallucinations, a sense of smell, which is occurring by itself. And one can have hallucinations of limbs, phantom limbs, if one has lost one's own limbs.
Dr. Oliver Sacks is talking to us about hallucinations, the title of his most recent book. Maybe you've got a question for him. We're at 206-543-5869. That's 206-543-KUOW. Or toll-free 800-289-5869. There are some hallucinations, you write, that seem meaningless and irrelevant. You can't really figure out where they're coming from. But other hallucinations tap into memories. How are hallucinations from memory different?
You recognize the people or things or places you hallucinate. They're familiar, and they may carry a lot of feeling with them. Or you may have a sense of being transported back to a place you knew once. And they are very rich and more dreamlike than the other hallucinations, which may not impinge on you at all and be irrelevant to what you're thinking or feeling.
What brings on these hallucinations from memory? Are they caused by something different than other types of hallucinations?
Well, they certainly involve higher parts of the brain. They may have something to do with events. For example, people who've been in concentration camps or in battle can have terrible hallucinatory replays of the smell of the gas ovens or the horror of battle. On a pleasant note, bereaved people may often have visual or auditory hallucinations of their late husband or wife, and these are usually felt as pleasant and friendly and somehow filling a hole and part of the mourning process.
That's a really important point, that sometimes hallucinations are reassuring or actually enjoyable in some ways. There's a category of hallucinations where we leave our body and we fly through space. And frequently people who have had near-death experiences say they felt themselves leaving their body and they could look down and see their body lying on a bed. This kind of brings right to the point what a hallucination is. People genuinely believe this happened to them, and that they weren't just seeing something, that they actually experienced, they had a spiritual experience when they leave their body and see their body. For you as a scientist, how do you come down on this?
There are really two things you brought together. One is a so-called out-of-body experience, when you seem to be looking down on your body from a few feet away. And the other, the so-called near-death experience, is a much more elaborate one. Now, out-of-body experiences may not carry any special meaning. Linnaeus, the great botanist, would have them with attacks of migraine. And he might open a door to the students and say, "Oh, I'm already here." and for him, it was a joke that he might see himself at other times. But with the more complex ones, one seems to be filled with bliss and joy, ineffable feeling, and to being transported to some higher sphere, which one may regard as heaven. People who have these may undergo a conversion. A very striking book has been published recently called Proof of Heaven.
Yes, we talked to the author of that book.
Aha. Uh-huh. I confess the book infuriated me.
And I should explain, this is by a neurologist who says he had a near-death experience, and he says that this proves to him, a neurologist, that there is a heaven. You are a neurologist, not convincing to you.
He can believe what he wants. He had the vision, and good for him. What annoyed me about the book was his insistence that the brain had nothing to do with his vision. He said he was in coma at the time, the brain was out of action, couldn't have played any part. And that's easily falsified. Probably as he was coming out of coma, he had the visions. But it seems to me that this man misuses his credentials as a neurosurgeon to maintain something completely anti-scientific, namely that one can have a vision of heaven or anything else without involving the brain. And as he should know very well, the brain is always involved in whatever one thinks or feels or sees or hallucinates or believes.
Dr. Oliver Sacks is my guest. We're talking about hallucinations. In some societies, people who have hallucinations are considered to have spiritual visions. But as you account, to most people in our society, it's considered a form of madness, and there's a stigma attached to it. Has the stigma that's attached to hallucinations held us back from truly understanding hallucinations, Dr. Sacks?
As a start, it holds people back from acknowledging hallucinations, sometimes even to themselves. They feel that hallucinations may portend madness or dementia. They're afraid to mention them. Their doctors may be under the same misapprehension. And I think it's very important to defuse hallucinations, and this was one of the reasons why I wrote the book. There are many sorts of hallucinations which are benign, and sometimes enjoyable, and don't carry any dark potential.
Why do you think it is that all societies, all known societies, have used hallucinogenic drugs, often for spiritual reasons? What is it? There seems to be a basic human need to have these experiences.
One can't really hallucinate to order, but there's a sort of a quick way to them can be through taking drugs and their profound effects on brain function. People, you know, often not satisfied with daily life, with humdrum life. They want something exalted and exciting and maybe unearthly. They may want something spiritual or perhaps something just like an artistic or musical vision. But drugs can be a shortcut. As you say, they're in every culture. They can be a rather dangerous shortcut.
Dr. Sachs, you did your share of drug experimentation, as you recount in the book. You took hallucinogenic drugs. And were you taking these strictly because of your interest in the mind, or were you probably doing it for fun, too?
Both. It was a mixture of recreation and curiosity. I tried all sorts of things. I think I did it in an unwise way because I was always alone. I think one should probably only take things, if one takes them at all, in the right circumstances with good and responsible people around one. But for better or worse, I experienced a lot, which I think in some ways helped me understand some of my patients. But also I pushed the envelope. I was lucky to survive.
You kept a log of what you were experiencing. Some people, when they write down things while they're on hallucinogenic drugs, they read them back over afterwards and they just look like nonsense. So, did your notes make sense to you?
Sometimes, and sometimes they were nonsensical. But I'm a keeper of notebooks. I have hundreds of them since I was 14 or so. And so obviously, if I have a drug experience like any other experience, I will try and describe it. But I also find the act of writing and keeping notes is a form of control. And you are observing yourself in a strange state. You're not entirely absorbed in the strange state.
Well, as you said, having taken hallucinogenic drugs and experienced hallucinations made you understand a bit more what your patients were going through, and it certainly gave you a firsthand account of what you were going through while you were taking those drugs. But did it help you in any way understand the larger theoretical questions that hallucinations pose to mind scientists?
Some of the hallucinations seem to verge on, you know, on madness, and I could imagine overlaps between insanity and hallucination. Others seemed very clear. They were obviously perceptual and not like imagination, and I felt sure that sooner or later science would catch up and be able to monitor the abnormal activity in different parts of the brain while people were hallucinating. And now this has been done. And it can be very specific. For example, there's a particular part of the brain, the back of the right hemisphere, which is involved in the recognition of faces. And if people are hallucinating faces, that part of the brain is hyperactive. Or one should put it the other way around. If that part of the brain starts firing by itself, and all hallucinations go with a sort of autonomous firing of a part of the brain, if it fires by itself, then you will see faces.
Dr. Sachs, what are the great unanswered questions about hallucinations to you?
One is why we should be so liable to them and so open to them. Another is, why don't we hallucinate all the while? It seems to be built into the connections of the nervous system that hallucinations are possible. I think they're a very unusual form of consciousness, which you can't compare to dreams or imagining or fantasies or anything else. and they enlarge one's conception of what's possible in consciousness, these other forms of consciousness. And and they are entirely individual. They have some qualities which are built in. For example, the face area produces face hallucinations, and others which will seize on people's experiences. They've always been a part of being human. I suspect they're a part of animals as well. Their accounts of dogs and other animals behaving as if they smelt or heard or saw something. And so I think they are very, very fascinating and deserve close study, and they're getting close study at the moment.
And a lot of the new discoveries about hallucinations being made in the area of mind science are part of Oliver Sacks' book, Hallucinations, as well as kind of a lengthy description of the different types of hallucinations that people experience and what kind of brings them on. Dr. Sacks, we really appreciate you joining us today.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. David Hyde produces the conversation with Arwin Nix. Allie Ferguson is helping us produce the program. Bernard Ouellette is our engineer. From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.